introduction was this, Sterling.
Sterling.
Sterling introduction.
I don't know what he did. He has a pause in it. Huh? I think it's a Sterling introduction.
I wish to turn the floor over to Rabbi Willig as soon as possible. I just want to welcome you to the second in the series of Shiurim and the topic, Men, Women, and Tznius. Rabbi Willig, as you know, is a Rosh Hashiva at Yeshiva University and Rabbi of the Young Israel of Riverdale. His topic this evening will be individual responsibilities in this area, such as Kol Isha, covering the hair, etc. Rav Mordechai Willig.
No, that's not.
Pleasure to once again join you for an evening of Torah study. And when I was here last week, I mentioned my roots in this community as a young man growing up in Queens at a time when Queens was not the great center of Torah that is at the present time. And I was just reminded by Rabbi Milne Shlita that I used to come to visit his son, who was a classmate of mine, and this goes back now to, this goes back over about 30 years, a little before they left, to come and play basketball. About 30 years, a little before they left, to come and play basketball here in Forest Hills High School on Friday afternoons. It gives you an idea of my roots here in your community. You may not be aware that I used to also come on Shabbos to visit here in the shul sometimes. So it's Torah Machzeret al Achsanya Shalom. It's coming, returning back to a shul which I knew from so long ago. But Milner wants to know what happened to me in the last 30 years. So I guess we'll find out tonight if he agrees or disagrees. Because the last week what I spoke about was more or less like mother and apple pie. It was hard to disagree if you came from an Orthodox perspective, what I spoke of last time, which was introductory in nature. We spoke about tznius, modesty, as a positive value. Tonight, what we'll be discussing is much more controversial. Because tonight we're discussing nitty-gritty. You know, we take the gloves off. Now we go into discuss the specifics. And it always becomes difficult, but we cannot shy away from this. And I'm going to tell you my opinion. And I'm saying in advance that my opinion on these matters is not necessarily a universally accepted one. We will mention explicitly the controversies involved, the very differing opinions. But we are commanded by the Rabbanu Shel Olam, if we have an opinion, to share it with others. Comes to a Psak Halacha, I say up front, before I even say another word, that in this community the Psak Halacha belongs to the Rav. So whatever I say today, whether it goes more strict than what the Rav says, ignore it. If it's more lenient than what the Rav says, ignore it. So I'm just giving you where I'm coming from. When it comes to the bottom line here in the community, whatever the Mohad Asra says goes. No one should make any mistake about that. I was asked to speak tonight on three topics, three difficult topics, and they are Kol Isha, the obligation of a married woman to cover her hair, and modesty and dress. In actuality, all three topics are discussed in the same piece of Gemara and the same Siman Shulchan Aruch. And that's the only source to go to. There's no other way. You have to go right to the sources and you'll try to analyze it together. The Gemara has, and we'll go in order. The Gemara has four things in a row, and you'll see in a minute. We just have Shalosh Shem Arba. Three came to four. That's going to be very significant. Four things in a row, the Gemara Masech the Brachas, Daf Chav Dal Ramad Aleph, refers to as Erva. The first is Tefach Bisha Erva. The second is Shok Bisha Erva. Tefach means the size of a fist, presumably referring to the size of a fist of a woman's body which is exposed, which should not be exposed, has the status of Erva. Shok, which refers to a certain part of the woman's leg, is considered an Erva. Kol, the woman's voice, Kol Bisha Erva. And finally, Seyar, the hair, Bisha Erva. These are the four consecutive statements in the Gemara Brachas Chav Dalem and Aleph, which are considered here to be in the status of Erva. With respect to what is somewhat of a controversy. The Gemara discusses it in Masech the Brachas, gives you a hint, a clue, that Brachas is about Kriyashma. What this means on a simple level is that when a person is reciting the Shema, he's not supposed to be involved with anything to do with Erva. V'lo yireh v'cha Erva's dover, which the rabbis interpret to mean, he shouldn't be looking at something which is in the category of Erva. And of course, looking refers to the tefach, refers to the shok, refers to the seir. Kol obviously is the sense of hearing as opposed to the sense of sight. But also, the simple reading is it should not be heard during the recitation of the Kriya Shema. This is the Talmudic passage in Masechta Brachos of Chav Dal and Amud Aleph. Now, it's very important that we give a little bit of background over here. We shouldn't jump to conclusions and we shouldn't make statements which are irresponsible. The Gemara's expression when it says, Tefach b'sha'erva is lemai. For what? For purposes of what do we consider it to be an erva? Ilema listakuleba. Do you mean that a man may not stare at the fist size of a woman's body being exposed? Not true. V'amar av sheshes. Even staring at the tiny pinky of a woman is prohibited. What are you telling me? A tefach the size of a fist, even the tiniest pinky. Ela beishto lekriyishma refers to his own wife. His own wife. There's no prohibitions of staring at any part of her. However, despite that fact, while he's saying Krishna, he may not recite the Shema while staring at his own wife. But the Gemara tells us, if it's less than a tefach, if it's less than the size of a fist, then you apparently may recite the Shema. If it's the size of a fist or more, then you may not recite the Shema. This is very important. Now you note that I've translated the word mistakel as to stare. This is given by the Rishonim as opposed to liros, which means to look. Mistakel means to stare. There is a major, how should I put it? There's a major discussion in the Mefarshim as to what exactly the word stare means. What does it mean? Specifically, there are two apparently conflicting Talmudic statements. Earlier in Tractate Brachos, the Gemara tells us as follows a very important lesson for all time. But the Gemara tells us that the pasuk we say every day in the Kriya Shema, for those asur achrei levavchem v'achrei einechem. Don't stray after your heart or your eyes. Achrei levavchem zuminus, don't become a heretic. Achrei einechem zuznus, you should not look at the things which are lewd, which are immoral. So the Torah, the Gemara quotes an explicit verse in Kriya Shema to prove this point. There's an additional Gemara. The Gemara is found in two places, in Masechta Ksuvos, Daf Mem Vav, Avodah Zarah, Daf Chav. But the Gemara once again says that a person may not stare at a woman. Also the istakel, and the Gemara quotes had a different pasuk. The pasuk is v'nishmarta mikol dovar ro, to beware of any bad thing. And the Gemara explains shloyahar adam bayom v'yovel de tuma balayla, that a person should not think bad thoughts or look at things he shouldn't be seeing by day, because it may lead to certain consequences at night. And the Gemara there draws a distinction between a married woman and a single woman. If the woman is married, he should not stare at her, even whatever she looks like. If she's single, he shouldn't stare at her if she's pretty. The Gemara apparently draws a distinction between a woman who's pretty and not pretty, which is, of course, also very interesting. A person has to be a maven, what's considered, who's a yafel, who's a mechueres. You know, that's a very interesting statement in the Talmud. So the question is, there's two contradictory Gemaras. They quoted two different psukim, two different verses to prove the point that there's a prohibition against staring at the woman. The smak, the Sefer Mitzvah Skotten, gives an answer. And one of the giants of the last generation, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, on his own, without seeing the smak, gave the identical answer. Staring at a woman could be a prelude to immorality. We know this from life, and we know it from the sources as well. Such a stare is prohibited by the source. Don't stray after your eyes. This is considered immorality because it's a eye which will lead you to your ultimate, much greater sin of immorality. That's the Gemara in Brachos that you'd base them in base. The Gemara about Azar and Ksuba says a smack, and Rav Moshe echoes it. Does not refer to that kind of a stare. No, absolutely not. The man is not going to do any znus. It's impossible to do znus. It's out of the question for whatever reason. He is going to stare at this woman for the purpose of hanah, for the purpose of enjoying her appearance. And there's no possibility in the world of any immorality to be resultant from this stare. There's a totally different prohibition. This is a prohibition which derives from the verse, "V'nishmarta mikol davaro." Rav Moshe has two differences between the two prohibitions. The first, he says, is a prohibition which is gender blind. It applies to men and to women. A man can't stare at a woman with the intention of immorality, nor, for that matter, may a woman stare at a man for the intention of immorality. She'll run after him for immorality. Absolutely prohibited. Even the stare itself is prohibited. Whereas, v'nishmarta mikol davaro, based on anatomy, is a prohibition which is limited to a man. With the Indian of Tzazel of Atala and these kind of things apply, it just doesn't apply to a woman, period. Secondly, Rav Moshe suggests, the Vilosa Surach Rayanechem might be considered what we call Abizrayo de Gilearites. It's something which is a lead up to the sin of immorality, and therefore might be included according to many authorities as Yehoreg Valyavo, that you should rather die than violate it. Whereas the prohibition of the Shmarta Mikol Darav, which is much more technical, not because it'll lead up to Gilui Arayos, the immorality, would not be in the category of Yehoreg Valyavo. That's what it says in Tshuva Igros Moshe, and the Yisod is already in the Smak. It's very important. It's very important because we have to understand that these things are real. It's part of life, and it's part of life in the time of our ancestors, and it's part of life in our times as well. We cannot take these kind of wanton stares, and it was cavalierly. And say, "Ah, what did he do wrong? He didn't do anything. He's just looking. He didn't do anything." Not true. He already did something, and it could lead to something worse. And the different levels of violation. Much of example discusses their movies. Movies, you know. Today, movies, I'll think of movies are the movies. You know, movies is a... Movies have gotten much worse since Ramesh wrote that tshuva. That's for certain. But even when he wrote this many years ago, he distinguished that some movies are absolutely prohibited. Why? Because they describe immorality in such graphic terms, and we're afraid that people who see this movie can then go out and commit immorality. And if you think that this is purely fantasy, just read the newspapers. You read about these chalila, these gang attacks. What caused this? What caused this? So they ask the jury and the judge, they ask, what went on with you crazy people? What did you do? And they say, we were watching this pornographic movie, so we got juices flowing, and then we went out and attacked someone in Central Park, or whatever we did. The rabbis were very smart. Very smart. So it could cause actual immorality, and if not that, it could cause, for a man, it could cause the other problem. For Moshe writes, that there are some movies which are off limits to men and women. But there are some movies which a woman may see and a man may not see. Because they have certain visually arousing scenes, which a man should not see. But it's not so graphic as though the woman who's not about to go chase after the movie star who's somewhere on the silver screen and find him in Hollywood. Maybe he's dead already for all we know. I mean, so therefore there's no possibility of immorality. It's not going to lead to that at all. But the other problem of arousal still exists. That's a very practical truth. This is the guidelines are true to this day. Of course, the movies have changed. You have to be a little more careful. But the principles are the same. And don't forget, the movies can come into your house too. Whether with your VCR, or even with your regular television. It's not just that you go out to the theater where these problems exist. If someone has a television in his house, right away it's a problem. Oh. Clearly we see that these kinds of stares are prohibited any part of the body. Even what we call an etzpektana, even the little pinky. However, there's an additional kind of stare which is not for the purpose of any hano. Not for the purpose, a man has a woman professor in college and he's looking at her because she's lecturing to him, you know, for an hour, so he's looking at her and maybe taking some notes and watching very intently what the professor is saying. That's called a stakla shalol l'shem hanah, not for the purpose of pleasure. So first you have to be careful that could lead to the purpose of pleasure. You have to be very careful about that. Rav Moshe is another tshuva about the rabbanim in Europe where they look at a woman who come with a shayla. You know, they look down, they look up, they would look as though straight for a long period of time. Rav Moshe explains why, because they're afraid to lead to hanah. Not that it's intrinsically prohibited. They're afraid. And some draw the line further away. I mean, the many gedolim, especially from Galicia, from Ungary, they wouldn't look at a woman, period. And even in Litton, the Chofetz Chaim, there are stories that they turn this way, turn that way. The Satmar Rav is the same story. They just wouldn't look, period. Others would have a different approach. They would look, but they would just turn once in a while, they would look down or away a little bit. And you know, this of course is a function of two things. It's a function of the beholder. What kind of person is he? It's also a function of the woman. Rabbis are very realistic. They have distinctions between a woman who's very good looking and a woman who's not so good looking. The rabbis were not naive to and oblivious to what's going on in the world. They were very realistic. So you have this case of seeing something which is not for the purpose of pleasure. What's the halacha? Here halacha is quite clear. It depends on what part of the body we're talking. Again, lewd staring, or even staring for the purpose of pleasure, which is the second step down, is prohibited even an etz b'ktan, even a little pinky. But staring, which is not in this category, we find the following dichotomy. If the part of the body is ordinarily exposed, the hands, the face, the feet, in those communities, then it's okay. However, if it's a part of the body which is usually covered, then it's not okay. Not allowed. Even if you're going to look at it not for the purpose of pleasure, it's prohibited. Either because it will lead to pleasure, or whatever reason, it's prohibited. How do we know? The rabbis tell us in the Masechta Bava Basra that a person may not pass by women doing laundry. If there's any alternative, any other way to go. They say, laundry, what's the big deal? She takes the clothes and throws it into the Maytag or into the GE. What's with laundry? So you may know, ladies, that in the old days before washing machines, they used to do the laundry by the river, and they didn't want to ruin their clothes. They would pick up their garments very high, they shouldn't get wet, and they do the laundry. So it was the closest thing then to walking on the boardwalk or on the beach. Well, the women were not properly dressed. And our rabbis are extremely critical of a person who walks, they call him a Russian. The person has a choice to walk here and he decides to walk there. So it's terrible. What's he doing? The answer is that he's violating this Easter of observing, of looking, even without the purpose of Hana, but a part of the body which is supposed to be covered. That's an additional prohibition. And this is all evidence in the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam. These are very serious matters. There are individuals who maintain that there's nothing wrong with this. What kind of business, you know, it's the famous story is told of Elia Lapian. Elia Lapian was the big tzaddik, Bal Musar, and the story was told of him when he was, if I'm not mistaken, when he was already in Kfar Chassidim, in Eretz Yisrael, that he was once giving a very strong Musa Shmuz against mixed swimming. Against boys, the yeshiva boys should not go to a mixed beach. And it was at a time when it was a very serious problem. Today, a lot of things have changed. This is a story from a generation ago. And the story goes that a particular student said, he came over afterwards to the Rebbe and said, Rebbe, I don't understand, what are you talking about? I go mixed swimming with my family, you know, and my father, my mother, my sister, and then we go out to the beach in Tel Aviv, and it doesn't make any impact on me. Zero, absolutely no, I don't feel anything. So the story goes that Rabbi Elia Lapian banged on the table and said, quick, fetch a doctor. This boy is sick. That's what Rabbi Lapian said. A very smart man. For first to say he's absolutely unaffected, but this is being not realistic. Or sick, one or the other. The Kadosh Baruch Hu created us with certain drives, which are essential for the upkeep of the world, as the Gemara tells us. Without it, the world stopped. It's a Gemara in Yuma, so we made it in Daf Yomi recently. It's also a Gemara in Sanhedrin. You have to have it. If you don't have it, it's a sickness, Khalil. So all these things are very important. Very important. I must add, this is a very significant exception to this rule, which the Rambam says explicitly based on the Gemara. And it is, if a man is trying to get married, so the Rambam says, and it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch as well, on the contrary, he's required to look at her. Which kind of look? Not just look number three, But even with discussing the look which is not for the purpose of pleasure. No, even look number two, which we call the purpose of pleasure, is permissible for the normally exposed parts of the body. Not, God forbid, look number one. Look number one is a lewd look, what the Rambam calls derech znus. That's absolute no-no. But to look to see if she's pleasing to his eye, it's critical. Otherwise, he'll marry her, she'll be ugly to him, and Chalila could be a divorce. You have to react to all the more invokes in this setting. You have to see the woman before you marry her. How much? This, of course, varies based upon the social setting. A little bit, a lot. You know, does he look through the curtain? Does he go out on a date? Or did they have a date in the living room? Or a date in the avenue? Or wherever they go. This is already something which is relative. But that he has to see, this is a given. Okay. Now that we've established all this, we can return to the Talmudic statement in Brachos Chaf Dalet Amud Aleph. We are taught once again that Tefach B'Isha Erva. Why? So Tefach B'Isha Erva means the Ishtal of Krishma. As far as Krishma, that has a shear of Tefach. For purposes of Hano, even the slightest, even the smallest pinky is prohibited. It's a prohibition. Tefach? If it's part of the body which is ordinarily covered and now it's uncovered, so then number one, for Kriya Shema it's a prohibition. Number two, even for non-Kriya Shema, there would be a prohibition even to look without the purpose of Hanok. That's called like the Gemara in Baba Basra about passing by the laundry. It's not allowed, so the Shira presumably is Tefach. That's what we generally assume. But I'd like to discuss a critical question now, very critical, and that is, well, where do you draw the line? You know, we've been avoiding it for the first part of our presentation. Well, what can you see? We keep saying, well, if it's the way that it's covered, if it's the way that it's uncovered. Is there any objective standard, or just it depends on the custom in that particular place, that particular time? This, to me, seems to be a very fundamental controversy amongst the Mefarshim right over here in Masechta Brachos. Specifically on the Rosh, in the third parak in Brachos, the question is raised in a somewhat different context. It starts off with the context of, let me just get the right place. Here it is. Masechta Brachos and the Rosh, Simen Lamed Zayin. Simen Lamed Zayin. He says as follows: V'davar sharaga lios mechusa b'isha. We speak about a tefach. It means in a place which is ordinarily covered. Here, that there are two mefarshim on the bottom of the Rosh. One is the Teferes Shmuel, the very bottom. He has the following line. Pirish lafuki mashaderach noshim lios megula. Going up on him, the face. You're not required to wear a mask. Vat savar on the neck. Viyodayim on the hands. Avol b'nira b'yenai. B'mekel shirigilos anoshim. Well, the mokel maybe should be. Shirigilos anoshim legalos roos, saying that they wear sleeveless. Urigilim lios pokos at pasuach at samach adodeh. Low cut. Zeo minagura the Korani Bohem Chukim Lotovim the Tefach Beisha Erva. In other words, even if all the women in town go sleeveless, but all the women in town go low cut, doesn't make a difference. It's still a violation. It's a violation, it seems on two scores. He seems like he's saying it's a violation of the woman's part, Chukim Lotovim. And it's also a violation on the man's part. But if he says Shema, when this is exposed, it's a violation on the man's part. It's a double violation. That's the impression you get from the Teferes Shmuel. This, in fact, is the opinion of the Mishnah Brura as well. The Mishnah Brura, who was, of course, considered the classical codifier of Jewish law on a practical day-to-day basis of Orach Chaim, makes a similar remark. Shulchan Aruch at Siman Ayin Hey Tefach Megula B'Isha B'Mokom Shedarcha Lechasosa, verbatim quote almost from the Rosh. Then the din is it's prohibited for Krishna. Says the Mishnah Berurah as follows. That's okay. What's the kni? A knee, of course. If the minig is to cover the arms down to the wrist or cover the legs down to the ankles, shirut tefach kama shagul fisha. Then if you expose even as little as a tefach, it's no good. Avos rosev is shoka, but her upper arm and her shok, which he translates as being the thigh, afila regilin lelech megula kederach aprutzos, also even if she goes that way, everyone goes that way, it's still prohibited. And also you get a double impression from the Mishnah Berurah. Also for the woman to go that way, and also for the man to say Shema when it's exposed. It sounds like he's copying exactly the position of the Tiferet Shmuel. Now, this is a very prevalent position in Halacha, and as a matter of fact, in the Beis Yaakov, there was a debate a generation ago, which I think has been resolved since then. The Chumra, like most things, have been resolved in the last generation. What about the knee itself or the elbow itself? I mean, that was the hot topic when we were growing up. Do you have to cover to the knee means, but not including the knee? Or must you cover the knee, over the knee? And the elbow or over the elbow? They're still fighting. I think now they stopped fighting. Now it's where they assume over. No more fights. But when I was asked that question, I said, it seems to me that if you look carefully in the psukim, that the word shok does not include the knee. I want to try to see if there's any balkari here in shul. I'd like to quote an explicit verse which tells us that the knee is not part of shok. Yeah, that's very good. It's a pasuk in the Tochacha that you're going to yak hashem b'shchinra, that if you misbehave, you're going to get boils. On a birkayim and on a shokayim. So birkayim is the knee. So the shokayim, the shok, is not the knee. So one could argue that assuming that the shok is the thigh, which is what the Mishnah Berurah assumes, it should be not included in the knee. If it says shok, it doesn't say berach. One could argue. But we shall see soon in a
It is not women, it's man.
It is man. But the same word, the first, that's not the context of Gilei Arayos. It's a question of of translating a word. How do you, but wait a minute now. Here I'm going to send which is going to send shockwaves through the entire room. What should send shockwaves anyway? My opinion is that this is a mistranslation of the word shok. My opinion is, again, my opinion. I'm quoting earlier sources. Me, I have no opinion. My opinion is that it's only echoing that of other Gedolim who have stated this opinion explicitly. That shok refers to the calf. Calf. I'll try to bring a couple of proofs. Behemoth is one. Behemoth is okay. Let's talk about human and human beings. And human beings. Right, we know what behemoths can go exposed and tall. It's not a problem. We're discussing human beings. Calf means the part of this below the knee. Proof? Who can give me a proof? Let's see if you can give me, before I give you my proofs, maybe you can give me your proofs. Huh? A couple of proofs. The most blatant proof, I guess, is from the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch speaks about chalitza. Everyone knows what chalitza is, in the case of there's a brother-in-law, we only do chalitza. What do you do with chalitza? Have you seen it? You have to take a shoe. And the shoe, I don't know if you've ever seen it in your life, I've seen a few. The shoe is wrapped on the calf. And then the woman unties it and pulls it off. The Shulchan Aruch says that you put the sandal shachalitza al ashok. Al ashok. Shulchan Aruch nechas chalitza. Kup sam tes, and you're in heaven as it. Moreover, the psukim in Sefer Shoftim, speaking, I believe, about the war of Shimshon, talks about shok al yarech. What does that mean? If you look, and you may accuse me of giving you some right-wing rabbinical interpretation. You know, you're giving. So I like to call as a source a more modern translation. You may be aware of the translation, which is a very brilliant translation called the Das Mikra, which has been printed out by the Moshe Rav Kook, which is not yeshivish and it's not chassidish. It's very scholarly, if you will. And if you look how they translated the word shok, they say clear from the context, the yerech is the upper part and the shok is beneath the knee. Yeah, it's right there, you look it up, it's right there. There are a number of other proofs to this point. Some of them are quoted by the Sefer Chazon Ish in Or HaChaim, in elaborating upon this siman. There's a Rashba who says that a shok is a mokum which gets dirty. Rashba on his daf, it gets dirty. Now the thigh really hardly gets dirty. It's really, on the hair, which says that men don't cover it. Now, gym shorts is a new invention. I mean, in those days, even if men wore shorter clothes, they wore it till the knee. So, but they didn't cover it out the hair. So there are quite a few proofs that appear that the word shok means the lower half of the foot. The Chazon Ish backs out at the last minute because he's afraid. That's right there. How can you say that the shok means the calf, but so many Jewish women, fruma, froyin, Orthodox, observant women, they don't cover their down to the ankle. Where he came from in Europe and in Eretz Yisrael, they didn't. They covered the knee, that was it. And they didn't wear stockings. Oh, so in some circles they wear opaque stockings, some wear black stockings. It's a different story. But in many places they wore either no stockings or they wore see-through stockings, and see-through was not considered a good covering. It wouldn't be on a walk around the see-through higher up, so we can't rely on the see-through. So because of that, he sort of felt compelled to back out. So there's a sefer by Rabbi Yamin Zilba, known as Rabbi Yamin HaTzadik from Bnei Brak. He bemoans the fact that the Chazon Ish sort of backed out. I was trying to convince him that he should stick with it and rule, in fact, that you have to cover all the way down to the ankles. That's their true tradition. So now, where do we stand? Where do we hold? So I wanted to make the following suggestion. I said earlier there were two opinions in the bottom of the Rosh. One we quoted, one we didn't quote yet. The one we didn't quote yet is called the Divrei Chamudos. Divrei Chamudos is written by the Tosfos Yontem, one of the great sages of Jewish people. He makes the following remark. He says, quote the Rashba I mentioned earlier, that shok is, even though the ish magula, a man will sometimes keep it uncovered. Sotus rosea enem b'chal yadeh, the upper arm. Umistaber dechol mokom umokom nefim in hagam. Every place depends upon its own custom. Why? What's the logic? The midi hu taim ba'ela de dvarim sheregila shelo lechasosam lo mikri erva. Should lo asi b'ule de'iru. Came in the ragel b'luv. Who can look come on Gabe called the same? So if it's commonly done, it's nothing unusual, then the Divrei Chamudos sounds like he's saying that there's not a problem with respect to Kriyashma. At least with respect to Kriyashma. He hasn't gone as far as to say that it's no problem, period. It's not a problem with respect to Kriyashma. If you look at Rav Moshe's Atzal's Chuva Sigur Smosh, you'll find he makes the following remark. Someone is critical of the women that are dressing properly. Yeah, you know, one of those critics of the Jewish community. Rav Moshe has an expression in the tshuva where he writes that since everybody in that town is doing this, you cannot consider it to be in the category of pritzus. What does pritzus mean, literally? What does it mean, parades? Break. Parades gather. There's a fence and you went through the fence. So if I go through the fence, I consider breaking the fence. It's true. But if there's no fence, there is no fence. And I walk there, well, why don't I break any fence? I just walk where there was no fence. The revision implies in his tshuva that you can't call a woman a prutza if she's just doing what everybody else in town is doing. You just can't. You cannot consider it to be a violation of prutzas. But, Ravashin writes, yes, ideally she should do this. she should be more strict. What he calls the tzniyos bi'alma v'tavo aleha broch. It would be a blessing if she would be more strict. Now, clearly, Rav Moshe is not referring to the additional stringencies, you know, that they may have in one community, may have sharam to go down to the ankles or to the wrist. That's obvious. That if everyone in town is going with the covering till the elbow, she's not required to go to the wrist. If the, I don't know if it's a tavo aleha broch. Why? Not any broch at all. Do what everyone else is doing. My reading of Rav Moshe's tshuva was that he meant that even if she's uncovering, she's wearing what they call in short sleeves. That's what we get from the impression the tshuva is referring to. That they used to wear, they still wear many places, sleeves to here, you know, very short sleeves, not to the elbow. That if everybody is doing it, you can't say it's preached. Everyone's doing it. Which seems to be the position of the Divrei Chamudos, but carry not only to the man who's saying the Shema, but extending it to the woman herself. Now, that's a very, very significant controversy. And before making such a statement, one has to be concerned with the proofs that the Mishnah Brewer brings his position. You see, in the bottom of the rush, no one brought any proofs. No proofs, he just said it. But the Mishnah Brewer brings proofs to his position. I'd like to analyze his proofs and see if we could perhaps refute them and bring even one counterproof. The proofs go as follows. He says, the Rokeach does not, if you look carefully, doesn't say quite this. He just says that the Zeroa is no good, but it doesn't say explicitly that it's no good even when everyone else is going with it exposed. The Chayodim said it, that's true, but that itself is not really an early source. The Chaymuchach b'ksubas ayin beis amid beis duhudas Yehudis. That's already a proof. A Gemara. I came up much earlier than that. The Gemara says that it's grounds for divorce. That if a woman goes with Zerol Sam or Gulos for sleeveless, it's considered a violation of Das Yehudis. Das Yehudis means the customs of the Jewish woman, and it's grounds for divorce. So what do you see, says the Mishnah Brewer? It must be something which is unchanging. It's in the Gemara. You can't change the Gemara. The Gemara, whatever's in the Gemara, is forever. That's it. If you look carefully in Rashi and Ksubas on the Afayin Beis, you'll see something very interesting. Rashi says, what's Das Yudis? Das Yudis is opposed to Das Moshe. Das Moshe is a question of covering the hair, we'll get to that a little bit later. Das Yudis means, says Rashi, the customs of modesty which the Jewish women accepted upon themselves. Rashi. The Jewish women, Yehudis, Isha Yehudis, the Jewish woman, accepted upon herself, themselves, to cover a certain particular part of the body. Now, one could therefore suggest that Das Yehudis is subjective. If in Williamsburg, the custom is to cover down to the ankle, that's their Das Yehudis. And you dare not compromise that. On the other hand, the same logic dictates that in a particular situation, the custom is to expose more, even at Zeroah, which the Gemara speaks, that while in Talmudic times was a violation of Das Yehudis, because in Talmudic times apparently universally they covered at least till the elbow, maybe even to the wrist, for all we know. We don't know what Zeroah means, we don't know what Shog means. But that could change. It's possible. And if it changes, it's no longer a violation of Das Yehudis. I'll bring it.
There is a question of Mirvis.
That's right.
Mirvis is, you go by the meaning of the city. It does not mean that she behaves well. For Mirvis to lose the children, she's not there.
But exactly, but don't forget, the Mishnah Brewer is bringing a raya from that Gemara. You're telling me I have no raya for Keret. Okay? But I have no raya too either. There's no raya. The Mishnah Brewer is bringing a raya from Ksubas Ayin Beis that is an unchanging law which can never be modified whatsoever. I say, how do you know? You know, if you look carefully in the Gemara, in Ksubas, in the same document there, you get the impression in that Gemara that a married woman has to wear two head coverings. Two head coverings. Satmaya, you know what you've seen? They wear a shengel. On the top of the shengel, they always wear a hat. That's what it says in the Gemara. The simple reading. What happened? How come we don't do that? So I thought the answer was, as Das Yudas, then it could change. I'll go beyond that. If you look in the Rambam, the simple reading of the Rambam, the Mechaber in Ebenezer is that a single woman has to cover her hair. Lo telach, this is the quote of the Rambam. Lo telach, the Bnos Yisrael, Pruas Rosh. Echas, Besulas, V'echas Nesuas, V'echas Yeshesish, it doesn't make a difference. Now, we don't have that. They had it. You look in the history books, they had it, and the Rambam's son, they had it. What happened? But that's the same answer. That was a Das Yehudis, the single women, and apparently it changed. That seems to be the best response. Oh, now let me bring you a proof, if I may, this could be the proper interpretation. We read four consecutive halachos we began with. Tefach, then Shok. The Rishon raised an obvious question. If it already says Tefach Misha Erva, why must it say Shok Misha Erva? Shok is just, you know, in one portion. Why must it spell out Shok? What's new? We know Tefach Misha Erva. What's the Chiddush of Shok? And they give different answers. One answer is, we saw the Rashba, the Shramo, even though it's in a man it's exposed, it's still considered an error for a woman. That's one answer which is given. Other answer is, that's what the Ramo seems to quote, that Shok means it's a code word for another woman, not your wife. And if it's another woman, not your wife, then even less than the Tefach is also prohibited. That's what the Ramo quotes in Siman Ayin Esif Aleph. So Shok doesn't mean Shok. It means even less than, means another woman. It's called a Shok. And there's another terutzim which are given. I have a better terutz. Chutzpah, my partner, too. One could suggest a better terutz. It seems to be a better terutz. The better terutz would be like this. Tefach b'isha erva. That depends on the kol mokom and mokom kafim and hoga. Each and every place. Shok b'isha erva. No matter what. No matter what the custom is. That would have been such a beautiful answer. Beautiful. Tefach means subjective, and Shok means objective. Agavaldige teretz. But nobody gives it. Nobody. Maybe some Achron gives it, but look at the Rishon, the Rashba, and the other Rishon, they don't give this teretz. So, don't give this teretz. I got the impression that it's not true. That Shok Bisha Erva is not an objective, absolutely unchanging halach. Shok is an example. You know, they give you examples of what's considered to be in those days in the category of Erva. If that's the case, it can theoretically change. So that maybe Mizmana Gemara Shok meant Kipshuto, like the Shulchan Aruch seems to say in the Nichos Yom Benezer, down to the ankle. And in the time of the Gemara, that was an absolute halacha. You had to be down to the ankle. Nowadays, however, if the custom is still down to the ankle as it is in certain parts of the Jewish community, remain. But if the custom in other parts of the Jewish community is to expose till the knee, above the knee, below the knee, it's already not the point. According to my understanding, the Shok is down to here. So before the knee, above the knee, Berach, Shok, till around. It all depends on the Minig HaMakom. If the Minig HaMakom is to cover till a certain part, then that's what has to be followed by the women. And that is the rule of thumb for the men as well. Whatever is normally covered is prohibited to be exposed when they're saying Kriya Shema, and they're not supposed to look at it even without intention to have any benefit from it, any pleasure from it. And whatever is normally exposed, there's no prohibition of Kriya Shema, and there's no prohibition to look if it's not for the purposes of having pleasure. This is what I wanted to suggest as being really the position of the Divrei Chamudas, and as I understood the position of the Igros Moshe, which is against, I'm telling you straight out, against the position of the Teferet Shmuel and the position of the Mishnah Berurah and the Chayyot. So I'm not saying this is a non-controversial position. I'm telling you it's very controversial. I tried to show that some of the weight of the evidence, to my mind, leans in this particular direction. How do you get out of the problem of Shok, which to my mind really means the Kef? And why didn't anyone give this answer of Shok being objective? And the other proofs I thought were really, Das Yudas really can change. And we brought a couple of proofs to that. If you will, editorializing a little bit in one direction. But the controversy precedes me by many years. This is an old controversy in the Gedolei Acharonim. Sorry.
Shok and Tefach.
Yeah.
No matter if it's DQ carriage or a township.
Yeah.
Will not affect the growing marriage in Das Yudas.
How do you know?
I'm asking you, the great effect, according to you, it she will become a mayoress by uncovering her shape or whatever?
No, so slowly. So the din is as follows. Whatever she uncovers, which is what we call pritzus, pritzus, as Ramesha describes it, means she is rebelling against the standard of that particular place, that is a violation of Das Yehudis, and that is grounds for divorce.
I would say that out of there.
Yeah.
In the morning, so this is pritzus.
Right.
The measurement. Here is lack of sneeze.
Ooh, that's already a very subtle...
You know that the effect will be not less and not more than whether she can be divorced, and then she then doesn't pursue it.
I know, yeah. I'm sorry, yeah?
Doesn't this relativistic term need to have some kind of a objective aim?
Oh, that's the question. So, because I mean, we're going naked. That can't be. I'm not exactly sure, because you see, what if you're going to assume that shok means to the ankle, which seems to be the simple reading, and then you're going to assume that the women today who don't cover that far are not in violation, so you begin to wonder, well, where's the line? I'll tell you a story. It's a new industry. Maybe you can capitalize on it, make some money. The new industry is called, well, it's our version of revisionist history. You know, we just change historical events. Well, how do you change that? What does that mean? There's a serious problem in certain circles. What is that? What's the serious problem? They look at old pictures. They look at old pictures and... That's Finsternoyga. Look at the pictures of the observant Jewish women from 30 years ago, 50 years ago. And you know, hey, you can't walk that way. Those are granddaughters, but it's right there. It's there. There's a new industry. The new industry, you add paint. You paint it, you take a brush. And now I'm serious, and I'm not kidding.
Sometimes you have 3 years old. Like
mixed feeding, you mean? That's right. That's not part of my topic for tonight. That's maybe for a different occasion. Maybe next week. But they literally extend the sleeves and the hems without exaggeration.
It's done to slow them too, but things are deleted now.
All right. So I have this. So look, I have it myself. My daughter said, Abba, you're telling me that this is not allowed, but I saw that 30 years ago. I have a picture, and this is a woman who's so away. What are you talking about? So there are really two approaches. There are three approaches. One is to paint it in so the daughter can't see it. Now that's one approach. The other approach is to say, well, that person who was doing it was wrong. My approach, if I may, is that there's no contradiction. 30 years ago, that was all right. Today, it's not all right. To my mind, it's no contradiction. I don't see any stira. Look.
in yeshivas who look at scans and say that again. So it's not always so. But basically your question is right. I was very strong in cancer. Just with a high school education for sure. And that's all. To send a kid to collegiate and post-collegiate thought and science with only high school Jewish education and with what the campus looks like today, morally, taking great chances. And the odds are very much against it. Thank you very much, and have a good evening.